Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories that are making news across South Sudan and the rest of the region this Wednesday, March 12th, 2025. Eight SPLA-IO members are freed from detention, but the IO wants other top leaders released too.
We welcome this step, and also we call upon the SSPDF and the National Security Service to release the remaining 20 members of the SPLM-SPLA-IO.
And there's rising concern about growing tensions in South Sudan.
With these rumors, if they are true, that Uganda forces are moving into South Sudan, this will also build up escalations. So people are worried. South Sudan is being worried of these developments that have been happening in the last few days.
These stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's main opposition group is welcoming the release of eight of its members from detention by the National Security. But the SPLM in opposition says 21 others, including key political and military leaders, remain behind bars, including Petroleum Minister Puak Keng and SPLA-IO Military Chief Duap Lam. Pok Both Buluang, Press Secretary for First Vice President Riek Machar, is urging authorities to release those remaining detainees. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Juba.
Pok Both Buluang, the press secretary for First Vice President Riek Machar, says the SPLM-IO was pleased to see the release of the eight members arrested by the National Security Service on Tuesday.
Yesterday evening, eight members comprised of three staff members in the office of the Minister of Petroleum, Paul Potkang Paul, three relatives to the minister, members of the party, has been released by the National Security Service. We welcome this step, and also we call upon the SSPDF and the National Security Service to release the remaining 20 members of the SPLM-SPLA-IO that has been under detention.
Pok says Gadwich Lam Poch, a senior SPLM-IO member and lawmaker representing Nasir County in the National Parliament, was arrested on Tuesday at his residence in Juba's Thungping neighborhood. He is being held at the Blue House, a notorious NSS detention center. Pok is calling on the government to release all the remaining 21 political detainees.
The information we have that they have been unlawfully detained. Some of them, they are constitutional post holders, and so on and so forth. We believe this is unprocedural arrest, and they are arbitrary arrest. So there's no any information given to us of which the SSPDF and the National Security decide to undergo a manhunt for our members. These arrests, they have paralyzed the process of the implementation of this agreement.
The SPLM-IO warns that the continued arrest and unlawful detention of its members in Juba and other states could threaten the 2018 revitalized peace agreement and push the country back into conflict. When asked about the arrested SPLA-IO military officials and whether they will face trial, the spokesperson for the South Sudan's People's Defense Force, Major General Lul Roy Kong, had little to say.
I'm not given any information.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe-Lueth refused to confirm the release of the eight SPLM-IO members.
We don't respond to public statements. These people were arrested, physical evidence, and already captured. They know what happened in Nasser. They know what happened here. And if they are writing, they write to the Sudan authorities.
Last week, Makwe confirmed the arrest of SPLM-IO politicians, saying they had violated the law. However, he did not provide details of the charges against the men or whether they would face trial. Tensions between the ruling SPLM led by President Salva Kiir and the SPLM-IO led by First Vice President Riek Machar have stalled the implementation of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. Each side accuses the other of violations. The latest arrests come after A deadly clash 2 weeks ago in Nasir County between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the White Army militia, reportedly resulting in multiple casualties. The government has accused SPLM-AIO leaders of collaborating with the militia, a charge the opposition denies. SPLM-AIO is urging the government to deploy the necessary unified forces, arguing that civilians trust them more than government soldiers. However, government officials say the unified forces cannot be deployed due to an arms embargo, which has left them without weapons. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
South Sudan's government is denying earlier reports that Uganda has deployed an unknown number of troops to South Sudan in a bid to protect the fragile government of President Salva Kiir as a tense rivalry with his deputy threatens a return to civil war in South Sudan. However, the United Nations is warning of what it calls an alarming regression that could erase years of hard-won progress in South Sudan. From Nairobi, Daniel Akech, senior analyst at the International Crisis Group, discussed the threat of South Sudan returning to civil war with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
The threat is credible, but it depends on the actions of the two principals, the president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, and the first vice president, Riek Machar, two leaders who tipped South Sudan into civil war in 2013 when the conflict broke out over competition within the South Sudanese politics. Now, what had just happened with these rumors, if they are true, that Uganda forces are moving into South Sudan, this will also build up escalations. So people are worried. South Sudan has been worried of these developments that have been happening in the last few days.
The latest tensions stem from fighting in the country's north between government troops and a rebel militia known as the White Army that's widely believed to be allied with Machar. Kiir and Machar are under pressure from the United States and others to move quickly to implement the 2018 peace deal and prepare for elections scheduled for 2026. What prompted this latest fighting?
There has been a build-up. One is that South Sudan has been stuck in this agreement that brought two leaders together in 2020 to form a coalition government. This government has been struggling to keep afloat due to dwindling resources. War broke out in Sudan in April 2023. That war has created a number of issues for South Sudan, at least three of them. One is it disrupted oil flows, and South Sudan government has been depending for its revenues on oil that is transported to the world market through Sudan. And 90% of oil revenues for the government of South Sudan comes from oil. Also, the war in Sudan has been sending back returnees who were refugees sent into Sudan during the civil war in 2013. These refugees are returning into a fragile environment. This is also creating humanitarian emergencies for South Sudan, for which South Sudan has not been able to address. And then third is the influx of illegal arms, because there South Sudan has a long border with Sudan. And this border, when the war erupted in Sudan in 2023, South Sudanese youth militias joined the fight because of desperations. And they joined the fight. They've been fighting on both sides of the Sudanese conflicts as low-grade mercenaries. These conditions had created pressures in Juba. And the reaction of the president has been to restructure his security forces in the country. By doing that, the first vice president, Machar, has accused the president of violating the terms of the existing agreements. And the latest accusations came up in February, and then it was followed by attempts by the president to redeploy forces into places like Nasir in Upper Nile. And this triggered new spikes in violence in Nasir. So this was the build-up to that. The provocations were coming from these pressures, internal pressures within South Sudan.
So how do you explain the instability in South Sudan since its separation from Sudan?
South Sudan politically became independent from Sudan in 2011, but it has remained dependent on Sudan in a lot of ways. One is that South Sudan is importing food from Sudan, and at the same time, it's exporting its oil through the Sudanese land. And this is the South Sudan is depending on this on this oil for survival, especially the governments and the elites. So the glue that has been holding these elites together is this oil money, which is coming from the Sudanese land. That's the land through which it is taken to the market. So South Sudan cannot survive without Sudan. So a crisis in Sudan, when it broke out, it created one large problem of creating a physical crisis right away in South Sudan, which has been growing, making it difficult for government to pay its civil servants and organized forces. This is creating a problem where the armed forces are engaging in extortions throughout the country. And the second one is the influx of arms is also encouraging non-state actors to pick up guns and use those guns as they walk in and out of South Sudan. So the vulnerability is so high that the conflict system in South Sudan and the one in Sudan could actually merge, because the area where we are seeing crisis now in Upper Nile is too close to Sudan, is bordering Sudan, where the conflict is also ongoing.
That is Daniel Akech. He's senior analyst at the International Crisis Group. He was speaking with my colleague, Mohamed El-Shanawi from Nairobi. The African Union on Wednesday said the announcement of a parallel government in war-torn Sudan risked cleaving the country, ravaged by nearly 2 years of unrest. The AU has condemned the announcement by the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF as they're known, and its affiliated political and social forces of the establishment of a parallel government in the Republic of Sudan, and warned that such action carries a huge risk of a partitioning of the country. The Democratic Republic of Congo is looking to the United States in its bid to find an ally in the government's battle against the M23 rebels. Republican strategist Joe Slavik, who is in Kinshasa today, has confirmed to VOA that early talks between the Trump administration and the DR Congo government are underway. He tells me that President Donald Trump will soon name Masoud Boulos to be a special U.S. special envoy to the Great Lakes region. Boulos is an American businessman and the father-in-law of the president's daughter, Tiffany, with previous business experience in Nigeria.
There are initial talks between the United States and the Congo. As a matter of fact, I think it's unofficial, but President Trump will be announcing a envoy to the Great Lakes, Dr. Boulos, has been kind of selected to come to the region to discuss with Congo and Rwanda how some of the conflict can be resolved, and then also engaging with the Congolese and companies like Gécamines on how United States can participate in the mineral wealth of the Congo.
So yes, there is talks underway.
Yes, they're initial talks, and I would say that there's an exchange of communication. However, I think those channels of communication are being formalized.
Why are these negotiations going on right now between the U.S. and the DR Congo?
I think there's concern about the elevation of conflict between the Rwandans and the Congolese, and of course the Angolans are working hard in the Luanda process to try to get the parties to stop fighting. And I think the reality is, when you look at Eastern Congo, truly the instability is really over mineral rights, and there's been a precedent for over 30 years, basically, of Rwanda accessing Congolese mineral rights, I will say unofficially, and maybe the idea is to try to find a mechanism whereby this commerce can be more formalized, and tariffs and whatnot can be used, and instead of spending money on militarization of the region, those funds could be basically reutilized in terms of developing the regional economy, possibly for the benefit of both countries.
M23 fighters, reportedly backed by neighboring Rwanda, although Rwanda denies that, have made big advances in mineral-rich parts of the country in the east, like you mentioned. Is President Felix Tshisekedi worried that they're going to make it all the way to Kinshasa at this point, which is a pretty far ways away from where they're at right now? It's like 1,000 miles, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't think in Kinshasa there's concern about the M23 or the Rwandans coming to take over Kinshasa. I think, actually, if that were to happen, I think it would be very bad news for President Kagame to destabilize the Congo. I think the United States, the United Kingdom, France, and others have made it very clear that that would be unacceptable. And as to the mineral rights in the east, you're not going to find Western investment come into that area as long as M23s in that area terrorizing the population. So, unequivocally, everyone knows that Rwanda is backing M23 as its proxy and that there are Rwandan defense forces in Congo. This has been a paradigm for the last 30 years. And, you know, billions of dollars have been spent to bring peace, and it hasn't happened. In the reality, this is more of an economic war than anything else. And hopefully the parties can find a way to come up with a solution. But like I said, the Congolese are asking that their sovereignty be respected. And then obviously the Rwandans are here. But look, every day there are minerals, wood, lumber, and other strategic and critical minerals that go back and forth through the border illegally. So maybe the real idea is finding a way to have that trade more, say, formalized, official. And if you think, if you could kind of get that mechanism in place, both countries would not have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in terms of defense and military action in the region.
Do you know if those M23 rebels, are they controlling any of this? You talk about how it's kind of like a illegal black market thing going on with some of the sale of these items, the lumber, the precious metals. Did the rebels have some of that right now?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a tremendous amount of gold, tantalum, and coltan that are currently being exported to Rwanda. There's a couple mines. I think one of them is called Lulabaya, if I'm correct. That mine's been taken over by the rebels. And if the rebels aren't themselves proactively mining it, the people or the local communities that are mining it are being charged a surcharge for those minerals to move.
So we know that there's some valuable resources there, and we know that what the U.S. wants. What would the DR Congo government get out of this?
Well, I think, look, the reality is you've had China heavily invested in the Congo. I mean, a lot of it's through, and this has happened under the previous administration, but there was a lot of corruption involved in some of these mega deals. And under President Tshisekedi, they've tried to reset some of these deals whereby the Chinese have been forced to pay money that was owed to the state. And I think they're trying to diversify their investor base. And of course, the United States and other Western countries are very interested in coming and developing these assets in Congo. So in the Congolese context, you know, diversifying investment, you know, critical strategic minerals are very important. And I think if they could kind of stabilize the country and, you know, there could be peace with the Rwanda, I think you would see a major uptick in investment, and it would be probably to the benefit of both countries.
That is Republican strategist Joe Slavik. He was speaking with me from Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic of Congo today, while Kigali denies directly backing the M23 rebels. It has said its troops are operating in the eastern DRC to defend Rwanda's sovereignty and borders. In addition, Rwanda accuses the DRC of sheltering a militant group that aims to overturn the government in Kigali. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, a judge adjourns the trial of a top Tunisian opposition official. Find out why when we come back.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Today's words of wisdom is a Tonj proverb.
Hello, BOA. This is Mayor Angelo Deng from Toj Nos Payamp of Gokuyat East County, presenting a proverb from Jiang Soil. The proverb is, Eyach Enkul Fier. Its English translation is, it is the stomach which throws the leg. It means you can't do any work that requires application of pause without having eaten. Thanks.
A judge on Tuesday delayed the trial of prominent Tunisian opposition figures accused of plotting against the state until April 11th and refused to release the detainees. Tunisia's political opposition says the charges are fabricated and a symbol of President Kais Saied's authoritarian rule. Protesters gathered outside the courthouse on Tuesday to support the defendants. I narrate this report by journalist Nora Hafeda. The trial of 40 people accused of conspiring against the internal and external security of the state and belonging to a terrorist group will resume on April 11th. Earlier this month, the court postponed their trial but left them in detention. Some of the accused have been jailed since 2023. According to the public prosecutor, the suspects, all members of the opposition, sought to overthrow the Tunisian state and the administration of President Kais Saied by force with the help of foreign countries. Several defendants are also accused of helping suspicious contacts with foreign diplomats. Half of them face the death penalty for inciting people to arm themselves against each other. Several human rights organizations have described the case as political, aimed at suppressing dissent. Ahmed Galoul is a former minister and former leader of the Ennahda Islamist Party.
The execution of Kais Saied's plan, such a plan was declared in his inauguration statement in front of the of his parliament after his fraudulent elections. In those statements, Kais Saied declared and announced his enemies, and he said that he will have to deal with them ASAP. These executions, or so-called court judgments, are a concrete imitation of the same atrocities and barbarian behavior that was happening in Syria.
Saied was elected president in 2019, but in July of 2021, he froze parliament and started dismantling the democratic advances that were made after the 2011 revolution, which launched the Arab Spring throughout the region. Opposition leaders accused Saied of orchestrating a coup in 2021. Rights defenders and his political opponents say since then, freedoms in the country have deteriorated. Saied said in 2023 that the arrested politicians were traitors and terrorists, and that judges who acquitted them would be considered their accomplices. Khamid Khamir is an opposition leader in Tunisia's parliament. He says the trial of the opposition activists is political because the authorities took the initiative from the beginning, the moment the leaders of the political opposition gathered to unify their efforts and actions in confronting the system. Khamir also notes the government's use of secret trials. He says instead of addressing public opinion and the media calls for a public trial, as the accused have asked, the authorities are going to a closed secret trial to avoid all the shortcomings in this case. Human Rights Watch urged the Tunisian authorities to immediately release all those arbitrarily detained in this case and end the court proceedings. Last month, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights also denounced the persecution of opponents in Tunisia, saying that many of them were, quote, subject to vague accusations, end quote. Tunisia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs has said that it read the UN statement with astonishment and criticized what it said were inaccuracies. The ministry added that Tunisia can give lessons in those who think they are in a position to make statements on human rights. For VOA journalist Nora Hafeda in Tunisia, I'm Carol Van Dam. Some medical scientists and pharmaceutical companies say the decision by the United States to halt most aid to Africa means that the continent won't be able to make its own vaccines for quite some time to come. Darren Taylor has the details.
The COVID-19 pandemic threw a spotlight on Africa's inability to make its own vaccines. When developed nations bought out vaccines made in the United States and Europe, Africa was left in short supply. Its pharmaceutical manufacturers lacked the technology and the capacity to supplement supplies. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden said it would help Africa establish vaccine production facilities on the continent. But sharp cuts to foreign aid programs this year under President Donald Trump may mean that won't happen. Stavros Nikolaou, head of Africa's biggest pharmaceuticals manufacturer, Aspen Pharmacare in South Africa, is pessimistic about the possibility of the continent being able to make its own vaccines anytime soon.
Disappointingly, and again in the context of new outbreaks of regional pandemics, Mpox in this instance, very little progress has been made. We've been speaking about a lot of things and good plans. Those plans are yet to materialize. Mpox vaccines do exist, but they've been stockpiled and procured some time ago by wealthier nations. And now you have Africa relying on either scrambling to try and source its own vaccines or relying on donations. Neither of those are sustainable options, and neither are they the options.
Mpox is an infectious disease that the World Health Organization says can cause a painful rash, enlarged lymph nodes, and fever. Most people recover, it says, but some get very sick and some die. This year, says the WHO, Mpox remains a public health concern in Africa, with outbreaks in multiple countries, particularly in Central and Eastern Africa. South African medical scientist Professor Glenda Gray at the University of Cape Town says the absence of US support for African efforts to make vaccines means the continent must help itself to achieve this goal.
We do need government support to help manufacturers make vaccines, or to do that shift to do the tech transfer. Pharmaceutical companies can't do it all by themselves, and manufacturers can't do it by themselves, particularly if they're African. So we have a funding deficit. In other countries like Brazil, the government supports vaccine manufacturers and have big shares in them to enable them to build up their volumes. The AU and the member states need to come together to support the quest to make vaccines on our continent.
In particular, says Nikolaou, Africans must work together to set up facilities to make the antiretroviral or ARV medicines domestically to treat HIV patients.
We import more than 80% of our antiretrovirals into Africa, yet we are saddled with 70% of the infection rate. For any manufacturing to survive on the continent, we need to have sustainable demand, sustainable offtakes, and we need to support the local capacities. It's no use saying, look, Africa, put up these capacities, and then the international procurement agencies continue buying these products outside of the continent.
After the COVID-19 pandemic, the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention set a goal for the continent to manufacture its own vaccines by 2040, an aim that Nikolaou and Gray say remains very distant at this stage. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps it up for us this Wednesday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow missed this broadcast, just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. And VOA Africa is now available on WhatsApp. To share your input on our broadcast or receive our daily news updates, text us on +1 202 322 7501. You can also follow our WhatsApp channel by searching for the username VOA Africa. In addition, you can leave your listener comments on that same number, which we will air on this Friday's show. We now leave you with the song Caro by WizKid. just a little correction on that phone number we just gave you. If you want to leave some listener comments for us, please dial +1 202-322-7510. That's 7510. We've been listening to the song Carol by WizKid. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Bob Bass, producer Kwame Afori, thanks for tuning in. Have a peaceful weekend or a peaceful this evening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow evening on another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.